everyone, and welcome to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, the mighty 101.5 FM. I am one of your co-hosts, Jim Samaria.
Greetings, Jim, and I am your co-host, Mark Plotnick. Each week, Jim and I bring you songs, insights, and interviews covering rock music and more from the 1950s to the 1980s or wherever the music takes us.
Mark and I are authors of the book Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, and you can find it at Rolling Stones Records in Norwich. And our book features my photography of classic rock artists from 1973 to present day with words by the one and the only, thank God, Mark Plotnick.
Well, you know, after my mom had me, I remember her saying, I'm done, so.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
Well, today we are so happy to have on our show a rock and roll legend, and I mean a rock and roll legend, Mr. Ronnie Rice, who is the lead vocalist and still the lead vocalist for the Chicago-based group, The New Colony Sixth. How you doing, Ronnie?
I'm fine, guys. How are you? Thanks for inviting me on. By the way, I got to correct you in a second because of the fact you said, and still, I'm not the lead vocalist anymore because I left the New Colony, but I am with them when we do a show called The Cornerstones of Rock. So I'm with them on that. Other than that, I've been on my own since 1977, so I've been doing my own rock and roll. But I was fortunate enough, again, being with the Colony for so many years. It was great. A good time, and it still is when I see the guys. So, like I say, the only time I'm with the Colony is on a show called The Cornerstones of Rock, which we did on PBS years ago.
Right.
And not too long ago, actually. But time goes quick. Time goes quick.
It does.
Or quickly, whatever the word is, you know what I mean? But anyway, thanks again for inviting me on the program, and I'm looking forward to this.
Well, before we start talking more with you, Ronnie, we're going to play an artist who had quite an impact on you, all right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Wait, let me guess. No, you surprised me.
All right, we'll surprise you. So the song and the artist need no introduction, so we're going to hop into our DeLorean and go back to 1956, and here we go.
You ain't nothing but a hound to cry all the time.
Single I ever, actually, Hound Dog was the first record I think I ever bought when I was 13 years old, and been a fan of Elvis's in his younger years. I enjoyed Elvis's performances, and I did see him in person. Would love to have met him, and I'll tell you, yeah, there's a few people that are big influences for me, but Elvis was the first record I ever bought.
So, besides Elvis, who else did you like?
Excuse me? Oh, besides Elvis, I liked Little Richard, big fan of Little Richard. Chuck Berry, very influential. as far as guitar is concerned. Having that kind of shuffle thing and the way you played, it was unique at the time. And those were the Elvis and Little Richard Chuck Berry. Those were my three faves at the time. Jimmy Reed, who, of course, recorded in Chicago, who did You Got Me Run, You Got Me High, You Got Me Run, High, High, Run, We Went Live and Roll. And that is a song, when I first started picking up the guitar, I was into that. I bought his album, and so in the beginning it was kind of a bluesy kind of that kind of thing. Yet again, I'd be, again, the three majors were commercialized rock and roll guys with the three I'd mentioned. Yeah.
Well, you know, you had mentioned that you were picking up the guitar earlier on. So did you come from a musical family?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, all the music that came to myself and my brother are from my mom's side of the family, because her father was a vocal coach in Germany, I guess. And actually, and my uncle was the first violinist in the Berlin Philharmonic, her brother. It was, I guess, a big-time dude over there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he wasn't crazy about me. But he, it's mainly because my mom and I would argue a lot, so I think he got mad at me, I guess, so that was a problem. But, he was a big-time dude. I didn't realize how important he was until I was at a Friday's restaurant one time, believe it or not, and a girl who was waiting on us, and I noticed he looked kind of artisty, and I said, "Are you play an instrument or something?" You look. She goes, "Yeah, I play violin." I mentioned it to her, and she said, "Can you get me his autograph?" I said, "No, he don't like me." So that's now, that was the bottom line. Anyway, that's show business.
Now, what about your brother?
My brother, you know, it's funny because I think we both got that whole musical thing. My brother, I got him a job at Chess Studios here in Chicago years ago because when we recorded as New Colony 6, we used to go in, and we were extra engineers, a guy named Ron Malo. And Ron Malo did the Rolling Stone to a lot of people. And Chess, of course, still there as a monument or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
And they're still there. But I got my brother a job there. And after that, he wanted to be an engineer. And he worked at it. He went to DeVry. But as an engineer, he wound up anyway. I'll move it up a little bit. And he had his own studio out in Hollywood after that with a friend of his who he worked with at Chess. And big names. His clients were Madonna, Barry Manilow, Master P, Hammer.
Wow.
Fine Young Cannibals, Stevie Nicks, George Harrison. My brother actually mastered the Queen compilation, and he also mastered the Traveling Wilbury album. So he did a lot of stuff, man. Some big time people he met. Madonna,
she
was one of them.
When did you actually start picking up the guitar?
Well,
at what age?
I think it was about 13, 14. I'm not great on a guitar. I do well for myself, and I love playing it, and I love singing, and I love entertaining. So I think that the entertainment part, if somebody asks me what have I done, you know, for a living, what do I do? I always put down entertainer, you know. That's pretty much what I enjoy.
I know, Ronnie, you've been literally everywhere. I mean, you know, I think you've even played some synagogues.
I played churches, synagogues,
yes,
you know, seriously.
Yeah,
you've
been around and you do okay on guitar. So.
Oh, no, I'm happy with it. I mean, if I didn't feel it was worthy, obviously, I want to try to capture the feel that I'm getting when I'm singing. So in other words, if I'm doing an Elvis tune or if I'm doing one of my own tunes or whatever, I don't want them to feel like they're missing anything as far as instrumentally. So I got a very nice compliment. One of my favorite compliments, actually, was from a gentleman the other day who, and I've heard these a couple of times, which makes you feel great, is when they say, you know what, it sounds like more than one person up there, or it sounds like it's, you know, I don't want to leave them feeling that. I just want them to picture it the way I'm feeling it when I'm doing it. So to try to capture the feel of the whole tune and try to not miss anything. Just kind of keep it moving. And like I say, sound-wise, I want it to sound more than just one guy. That's, you know, if that's possible.
Well, you've had a nice long career, but, you know, if you picked up the guitar at 13, three short years later at 16 years old, you did your first recording. 16
Correct.
Years old, I mean, you're in high school, man. How did that come about?
Well, I'll tell you, Dick Biondi, obviously, a lot of people are familiar with the name. He lived in Evanston. I didn't realize that. Somebody told me that. They told me where he lived. And when I was 16, I just knocked on his door. I was a junior in high school. So I knocked on Biondi's door with a demo. I had a demonstration record with me, and I had four tunes on there. One was Donna by Richie Valens. I would just play Donna. And another song I'd written, Baby, Baby. I guess I used Baby a lot in my song. Anyhow, so that was another tune. And then what else did I have on there? I had about four tunes that I recorded just myself on a guitar. At a studio in Evanston called Sound Studio. I don't know what it was. You know, $15. I had recorded some. I brought it with me, and I said, "Hello, Mr. Biondi." You know, he was the hottest thing going at the time. This was 1961. And I he was very, very cordial. Come on in. And he did. And let me in. That's incredible. Next door to him lived Gene Taylor, who was, WLS, and he was the guy who became the program director. And both of these guys were familiar with the two biggest men in the business when it came to promotion in the record business. And they, behind me, had introduced me to all these guys, each of the three, Gene Taylor, Pete, and Howard Benton, who were the biggest promo guys, I was just saying. And they decided, why not make, you know, they said, let's bring him in the studio. And that's how it all started for me. And I did get into the studio. It was where Dick Biondi recorded on top of a pizza. You know what I mean?
I remember.
So
that.
It was International Recording Company. IRC was the name of the company. It was we did it at Sound Studios. And and I had a friend of mine who were in a band. And they had said, you know, they were nice enough to back me up in the studio, and I decided to take Runaway, the song, and record that. So they said, go ahead. And I did. Take one, bingo, bango. So while we're in the studio, it was one of those things where all of a sudden they say, you know, I wasn't happy with the recording when I heard myself. And I said, now I'm going to do it again. You know, first of all, they said, oh, don't worry, we'll give you a call, or, you know, that kind of thing. And I said, no, I want to do it again. So I did, and they signed me to a contract. So it was a local record contract, IRC, and my first record came out at the time.
Well,
it was called Over the Mountain. I was like 60.
Speaking of RIC, we have a surprise for you, okay?
So I'm ready.
We found a sample of another recording that you did for our RIC in 1961. So here is a 16-year-old Ronnie Rice singing Over the Mountain.
Over the mountain, across the sea, happy like running to endless misery.
God, man, that's great.
It was a 29-second.
Yeah, about 29
seconds. 29-second sample.
Yeah, it was good. So, Ronnie, you returned to IRC the following year to record Maybe It's Because I Love You, which after listening to it reminds me a little bit of a Ricky Nelson influence.
Me too.
Yeah. It was released in 1962. Why don't you tell us about this song?
Well, again, like a friend of mine who had written actually Over the Mountain. Now, it's not the Johnny and Joe tune, which was Over the Mountain Across the Sea. I think that was her name, if I'm not mistaken. But it was an original that this friend of mine, Neil Shevin, wrote, and he lived in Timber Ridge in Skokie. Was it Timber Ridge in Skokie? I think it is, yeah. Anyhow, he had written it, a friend of his, he and I used that song to go in the studio and record it as my first single. And then, you know, you keep doing it, hoping to get a winner, trying to get a hit record. Pete Howard, Pete Wright, who was, again, I was introduced to through Dick Biondi and Gene Taylor, and those guys, these guys I told you were the biggest record promoters in the city. The Astros were able to get a little airplay on these things, and all of a sudden we have top 40 list, WLS. And as it turns out, maybe it's because I love you, we tried it. Again, no big deal, but we did get on a chart on WLS because of Pete and Howard. And again, it's all started because of Biondi. And so, you know, we've been friends ever since. But getting back to the studio at the time, maybe it's because I Love You Again was written by a friend of mine. We tried it. And the group that played background was a group called the Don Corone Orchestra. Did you know who he was? Don Corone was a guy that did, I think it was at the time, they played at Adventureland, amusement park. He was a teacher. So he was at a couple of tunes that I'd done. Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to play Ronnie Rice's second release, Maybe It's Because I Love You.
Ooh, you run around with every guy in town. You took my belong to one, to one alone. But I'll be that fool forevermore, just to have you for my own. To have you for my own. So stop.
So, Ronnie, your career is now underway.
Yes.
You then record another song at RIC called Come Back, Little Girl.
Oh, yeah.
But then you moved on to MGM Records. And
One tune.
And, okay, so tell us about your experience at MGM.
Well, again, because of Pete Wright and Howard Bednall, again, being so influential in the record business out of Chicago, these guys got, well, I think it was Pete Wright. Pete was a guy, all of a sudden, you know, we did that, the song called, it was another song that was written by Neil Shevin. And I kind of had that feeling of Dion. And the I Know was the name of the song I think we're talking about on MGM, at least. That was the upside, the fast side. So that went out, and nothing became of that much either, except again, you know, hit WLS thing because of the influence of these people that I knew.
So,
and the bottom line is, that was it. That was the one tune on MGM. So be it what it is, again, I was young. I was very happy for what was going on. I was doing a couple of little record app things, lip-syncing tunes. And at the time, I worked, well, there were more tunes than that. There were a couple more tunes that I had done But you might, I don't even know if you have them or not, because you've been surprising me.
Well, we're going to surprise you. One of those tunes was Bitter Tears, correct?
Oh, yeah.
In 1964. So guess what? Here is you performing the song Bitter Tears in 1964.
That was a good tune. I like that one. It was nice.
Did you really? You're the one.
Yeah,
but anyway, well, Don Carone wrote it. Remember I told you they were backing me up in the studio, Don Carone's orchestra, you want to call it that. And Bitter, Bitter Tears. Yeah, damn, boy, I haven't heard it in 4,000 years.
Well,
Thanks for reminding me of some of the stiffs we've had. Thank you very much, everybody.
Well, we got more surprises for you, Ronnie.
Those are nice surprises. They bring back memories and make me feel younger. It's very nice.
Well, in 1964, you kept recording, and the song you did was I Want You to Be My Girl under the group
name of
Ronnie Rice and the Silverstones on Limelight Records. Who were the Silverstones? Tell us a little bit about them.
Silverstones were, so first of all, Silverstone was the name of an amplifier by Sears. I think Sears Roebuck.
Yes.
So anyhow, the Silverstone name came. It was my brother playing drums. I don't even know if I did. I play guitar. I don't remember. I think it says the gents on there. Does it say the gents on there? Oh, I don't remember.
No, actually, the gents came after the Silverstones.
Crazy.
Silverstones. Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. But actually, the Silverstones were my brother and a friend of his, Gary. His name was Gary as well. Bottom line is the record came out again. One of these tunes. I don't even know if that got any airplay or not, but I do know something interesting. Pete Wright, I told you, the cat that was my manager at the time, he put me on a venue with Gene Chandler at the time. And as you know, Gene Chandler, Duke of Earl.
Right.
So I was actually the token white guy in the gymnasium that we played. They were all black. I was the only white guy doing, come on, baby, let's go downtown, which was obviously the single. So I was lip syncing that. And then Gene Taylor. So we went, Gene Taylor. So Gene, I met Gene, and to go, this was in Gary, Indiana. It was an armory that we went to. I'm sitting in the back of the limousine. No, I'm sitting in the front. Gene Chandler's sitting in the back, you know, and he's wearing his cape. He has his cape. He's got the top hat. And I'm sitting in the front with the driver, and we go to the armory. And again, here I am, you know, lip syncing. Come on, baby, let's go downtown. Very nice audience, and it was a nice experience. And anyway, he's a nice cat. He was a nice guy. Nice guy.
Well, here's our little surprise. We're going to end part one of our interview, and we're going to take a listen to Ronnie and the Silvertones doing their song, I Want You to Be My Girl.
Well, come on, baby, let's go downtown. Come on, baby, let's go downtown.